at this. I mean, look at this. We just motored through straight up two episodes right there.
Was that grass a little too long? Because I just mowed right over it.
All right. I gotta get something to drink.
Yeah, you do.
So, thank you, everybody. Welcome to episode number 11 of Podcasts for Good.
Hey.
I am host, program manager Philip Kerrigan, and this is host
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the CFD.
You almost forgot it this time.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Awesome.
I type it more than I say.
Yes, she loses her position.
Yep.
Every 11th podcast.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it'll work.
Podcast number 22. Who the hell are you?
That's right.
I don't know who I am.
So we're here to talk to you guys about children's services.
Yeah.
So this is an all-encompassing topic. There's a ton that goes into it, but yep. We're going to talk today specifically with an organization called Child Care Aware of Washington.
Yeah.
They're an organization that ensures that every child in Washington State has access to high-quality child care and early learning programs.
That's cool.
That is a lofty goal.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a noble one. Because there's a whole ton of statistics out there about kids who start off disadvantaged solely because they don't have a good home life, number one. And they don't have early learning at their fingertips.
Yeah, access to services. Yeah.
So that'll be one of the things we talk about today. As we kind of went, we found some I think, fairly interesting statistics. I went with stats in two different areas.
Okay.
So first, the stats on the importance of childhood development. And then I talked a little bit about childcare statistics. Because I have three kids of my own.
Gross.
Sometimes.
I don't doubt it.
So I have three kids of my own, and I can tell you flat out, it is ridiculous the amount of money that you have to spend on childcare all by itself.
Yeah.
It's like insane. I don't know how anybody does it. I don't know how anybody does it.
Are you still surprised you're able to do it?
I am. I'm like, real surprised. Like, my wife keeps telling me we're good. I don't know how, because I keep
Are you expecting a call? Like, come get your kid. We're not taking care of them anymore.
He's finished.
Yeah.
He's finished. So we're going to talk first about the developing child, because I think it's a fairly big deal. So Harvard, ooh, the University of Harvard.
Oh, my.
Yes. So yeah. It's an Ivy League school.
It is.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Harvard has this center on the developing child.
Okay.
That's what they call it. The Harvard Center on the Developing Child. And they put together all these stats. And they did this really cool thing where they talked about the five things that really you don't know about childhood development that you really should.
Okay.
I cherry-picked four.
Now, are these, you're talking after a child is born, childhood development?
Yes. Yeah, and we're talking about not like when they're like a goo goo gaga baby.
Sure, like they start learning to talk.
Like they start to kind of learn
and
what are they doing and all those sort of things. Because, you know, when you're talking about birth to 6 to 9 months, it's really more about survival.
Sure, yeah, like, feeding the kid, making the kid sleep. Yeah. I'm sure they don't have a hard time with that, but like after that, then they have to learn.
Then there's these other synapses that are firing.
Yeah.
So this some of this stuff is crazy cool.
Okay.
So according to the Harvard Center on the Developing Child, more than 1 million neural connections occur per second in the first year of life.
Nice.
Per second. I mean, these kids are learning like they are taking it in. No wonder they cry. It would be too intimidating to learn that many things.
Well, they say children are like sponges.
Yeah.
There you go.
It really is that way.
Yeah.
And you know, you think about it, of course it would, because they have to learn, what are these things at the end of my arms? Oh, these are fingers. They can do things, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like
how to grab things.
How do I move?
Yeah. Right. How do I move? That is a basic...
Right?
Yeah, you don't think about it after you can do it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You think like, well, I've known that since birth, but you haven't.
Yeah.
You literally had to like learn that. So there's a million neural connections happening per second in a kid up in the first few years of life. That's insane.
That is insanity.
I really feel like if I had a million neural connections happening per second, I would not be able to operate as a human being.
You would just be shorting out?
I'd be like,
Yep.
Like, it would be too much. I don't want that many.
And then somebody would be like, oh, just hit him in the head with a brick so he sleeps.
System overload. System overload.
Cannot compute.
So that's another thing that's pretty interesting. 18 months is the age in which disparities in vocabulary begin to appear. So that is when, even at 18 months, that young, you can see kids who actually will probably linguistically learn faster than other kids.
So is that something about access to learning, or is that something that's more like this is just
I think that's where the nurture or the nature part comes in.
Okay.
Where like a kid kind of naturally has some of that stuff.
Sure.
But you bring up a good point, kind of segues into the nurture portion of it all, right? So more than 90% chance of developmental delays happen in kids who experience 6 to 7 different risk factors.
Okay.
Okay, so this is what I find really interesting. Harvard was able to sort of articulate what they considered risk factors, and these risk factors kind of led into all sorts of different things.
Okay.
So they did this graph where they show you the amount of risk factors versus the percentage of likelihood that they'll be developmentally delayed, if you
okay.
will. And there was even one that talked about the amount of risk factors when they're younger versus how likely they will be to have heart disease.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So according to Harvard, if a child experiences 6 to 7 of these different risk factors, they have a 90% chance of developmental delays. So that's poverty.
Okay.
That's caregiver mental illness.
Wow.
That's single parent households.
Interesting.
Low maternity education.
Okay.
So if their mother isn't educated very highly.
Yeah.
And then general maltreatment, neglect, abuse, medical neglect.
Sure.
Those sort of things.
Yeah.
If they experience 6 to 7 of these different risk factors, they have a 90% chance of being developmentally delayed.
Well, some of that makes sense, just like you'd think common sense, like if they're mistreated, if they're coming from an abusive home.
Right.
Yeah, a kid's not going to be able to learn as well.
Right.
But like, you don't think about, say, a mother not having, if she drops out of high school, for instance,
right.
instead of goes on to college.
Right.
You don't think about that immediately, but mm-hmm. as a kid, I mean, who do you ask?
Right.
Everything.
Right.
How does this work? Why does this happen? Why? Right. You ask your mom.
Right.
You
and
ask,
if they don't know,
yeah.
I mean, also, if you see, I think, you're conditioned. If you see the elements around you acting a
yeah.
certain way, that you will act that way. Even if you don't want to, you'll try to fight it as much as you can, and sometimes you just can't fight it.
Yeah, sometimes you don't know until
right.
you see other kids and
yeah.
say, oh, this is how it is.
Yeah, exactly.
At your house. Okay.
Yeah.
This is different.
I know. It's pretty cool. One of the final things that this Harvard Center talked about is for every dollar that's spent on early childhood programs, both in public and private, like
mm-hmm.
the dollars combined, there, depending on the area, there's a $4 to $9 return for every single dollar that's spent. So
okay.
for every $1 that's spent on the childhood programs, the economy gets $4 to $9 back.
Nice.
So that's why these childhood programs are so important. And I imagine when we talk today to the folks from Child Care Aware of Washington, that is something that they'll talk about, the importance of even not just for the kid,
yeah,
but for all of us in general,
well,
having early childhood programs.
It does make sense, too, to have good established programs for kids, simply because those kids are going to grow into be
yep.
adults.
Yep.
They're going to have to be functioning members of society
right.
at some point.
That's right.
So if you establish early on with a child, hey, this is something that you need to know, and here's how you can learn more,
yep.
here's how you can do better,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to do that
That's
as an
exactly
adult.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah.
That leads us into child care.
Okay.
So there are some also pretty amazing statistics on child care in general.
It costs $1 million a month to
it costs
put your
a ton
children in
of money
daycare
to take your kids to daycare and in home daycare too. It's not
I don't
like
doubt
a,
it.
It's not like you get that much of a price break with in home daycare.
Yeah.
So in Washington State, this is actually according to Child Care Aware's website all on its own.
Yeah.
In Washington State, there are 5,800. Licensed or exempt child care facilities in Washington State.
Okay.
And their max capacity combined
mm-hmm.
Account for about 164,000 children.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a lot more children in
right.
the state. Yeah.
So if you just do the math, it's like not even close.
Yeah.
There aren't enough facilities to account for the hundreds of thousands of kids that are alive in Washington State that need care.
Yeah.
So it is a sector that, to me, remember when we talked to the senior services folks?
Uh-huh.
To me, it seems like a sector that is in desperate need, as desperate as the senior services sector.
I don't doubt it. Yeah,
it seems like it.
Yeah,
because they're just, the statistics don't add up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Overall childcare capacity has actually dropped in the last 5 years, 8%.
Wow.
So instead of there being more, there's actually less.
I wonder what people who work at facilities like that, what their average salary is. If they're minimum wage employees, I would imagine that that kind of a job wouldn't be that high. It doesn't seem like anything that has to do with care, whether it's taking care of kids or babies or seniors or people in retirement homes. Yep. It seems like those are the people who are not getting paid at all.
If people say we're not paying teachers enough, we're definitely not paying child care people enough. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's go over pricing.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right.
So this is the average child care cost in Washington State.
Okay.
Let me give it to you. $975 per month per infant.
No.
$819 per month per toddler. $737 per month per preschooler. And $477 per month per school-aged child.
Wow.
To send your kid to daycare.
So if you have three kids, you're paying thousands of dollars.
Exactly. That means a family with two kids.
Yeah.
Let's just say, just pick it out of thin air. One is a school-aged kid that you need to account for because you're both working.
Yeah.
Right? Kid's done by three.
Yeah,
you got to account for. And one's a toddler.
Okay.
Their average monthly bill for childcare is $1,300 per month. It equates to $15,500 per year.
Jeez.
For their two kids.
Oh, man.
Yes.
I don't understand how people can afford to have kids. Right.
Put that in perspective.
And that's without any medical costs, without feeding a kid.
Food. It's not even feeding the kid.
Nothing.
Right?
Just housing them for a period of time.
Poverty level for a family of four in the United States is $24,000.
Oh. Mm-mm.
So that means if you have two kids and you are operating at the poverty level, which $24,000 is insane as a poverty level.
Yeah, yeah.
You're already like, you only got $9,000 left.
For the year. So how do you afford your house?
Anything.
Any shelter, any food, other bills, you don't.
That's why you see a lot of these families have like one father who works a job or two and then the mother stays at home because they quite frankly just can't afford the child care.
I don't doubt that there are families like that who have the child care situation where they have an outside member, a grandparent, a cousin, an uncle, an aunt, a brother, sister.
Come in and do it.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm just going to say this. The poverty level, it's going to sound mildly conspiratorial.
Okay.
The poverty level to me, I think, is, not to sound too much like the, use the vernacular of the day, I think it's fake.
Yeah.
I don't think $24,000 is sustainable in any
economy. Not sustainable.
So I think that, I don't know why this number is always so low, but if you did the math, $24,000 isn't, it's to me well below.
Yeah.
The poverty level.
Well, I'm wondering, too, if the poverty level, something that's, say, set by a federal level of government, it always has seemed to me, no matter what time of the year, like any time since I've been an adult, the poverty level has always seemed really, really low to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can imagine that some of that is like, okay, well, maybe in Bentonville, Arkansas, the poverty level
is
this. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But in New York City, the average is this.
Yes.
So you're talking like taking everything all across
Could
America.
Could you imagine $24,000 even here in Olympia?
No, oh my.
Right?
No, there's no way.
I can't imagine $24,000 with a single person.
Nope.
In their needs. $24,000 is really low for a family of four.
It's astronomically low.
It really feels like it's fake. It's a fake number. You pulled that one out of thin air.
And now you're applying to people and saying, if you don't meet this poverty level, too bad, figure out services on your own.
Right. So here's a better gauge for me.
Okay.
And that's the median income for a family of four.
Okay.
So this is the average income for a family of four in the United States. It's $54,000. That's the median income for a family of four. That means that family of four is making just shy of $55,000 on average in the United States, and child care per month is $1,300 or $15,000 a year.
Wow.
That means after child care, you have $40,000 for the rest of your family of four, for your mortgage, for your car, for your kids' food, for anything related to school in any way, yeah. any of that sort of stuff.
Bills, clothing, gasoline in your car.
It's pretty unbelievable. It's a fairly dire situation for a lot of folks, and yeah. what I find sad is that, again, this seems like we talked about this on the environmental podcast, it's just not a dialogue that seems to be existing correctly.
Yeah.
It just doesn't ever seem that the conversation around this particular issue is ever framed right. Yeah. It's not really a matter trying to prove that all the vulnerability of all these people. It's real. Yeah. I mean, these are just numbers. We should definitely do something about it. That's what I think is so interesting.
Well, I always find that it's more like, well, people who are living at poverty level, it's their own fault. That's the conversation mm-hmm. that is there. Like,
yeah.
well, if they were ambitious, they could be CEO right. of a company and make right. $200,000.
Right.
That's not how that works.
No.
No.
No, definitely not.
No.
And the other thing is, I don't think that there needs to be a conversation about how do we cover all the costs sure. associated with childcare.
Yeah.
But how do we make it to where somebody who's working poor
yeah.
can do that without having to worry about whether they pay the electrical bill or the yeah. rent.
So accessibility, affordability.
Yeah. yeah, those two things. So that's, to me, seems like a little bit about what Child Care Aware of Washington does. We're going to talk to Michelle Nelson. She's the Director of Community Engagement. And Robin Lester, she's the Chief Executive Officer. We haven't had many of those on the podcast.
No, we haven't.
I'm going to hit you with a question of the podcast.
Question of the podcast.
We do need music on that one, by the way.
You didn't like that?
No, that right there. Just do that.
Question of the podcast.
I'm going to throw a curveball at you. I am not going to ask you this question.
That's on the paper?
That's on my paper.
All right.
Not going to do it.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a more fun question.
Oh.
Because we were all kids. Supposedly.
Supposedly.
Yes,
supposedly.
Yeah. We were all kids.
At libraries.
And we all watch TV. You yeah. and I, clearly we've proven through our podcast
that we've seen a few episodes of
yeah,
TV.
Everything.
Yeah.
Name your favorite shows growing up as a kid. What were your favorite shows growing up?
My favorite shows growing up. So what age are we talking?
Let's see. So... age you can remember, let's put it that way. So from the age you can remember to like 10.
Okay. Well, I remember watching, now I have brothers, mm-hmm. so I remember watching a lot of G.I. Joe cartoon.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay.
Then there was a little bit of My Little Pony in there.
Oh, yeah. You sprinkled in some My Little Pony.
Yeah, okay. They call boys who like My Little Pony now, adult boys who like them, bronies. FYI, fun fact, # brony. Then I remember seeing, for some reason, when we lived in Arkansas, I remember seeing a lot of the Dick Tracy cartoon.
Wow, Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I know, right?
Wow.
But then as I got older, they had like, by the time we moved to Washington, there was this set of shows on after school. Mm-hmm. So I think there was like Chip and Dale
Rescue Rangers. Mm-hmm. Amazing show.
Yep. Power Rangers was on at some point.
DuckTales
was on. So, like, I dug that. I got into that. So
that was good. That was yeah. good. Transitioned into those.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
My mom says that I watched Sesame Street when I was younger, but I don't remember any of it.
Yeah, I don't remember Sesame Street either. Yeah. I remember He-Man.
Yeah, He-Man was a big one. When I was six, my brother and I got to go meet Skeletor and He-Man.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that must have been good.
Yeah, it was good. So there's a picture of me, like, standing next to Skeletor, all excited. I didn't care about He-Man. Yeah, yeah. I was just like, oh, yeah. Skeletor.
And then there was what else was there? There was, so there was He-Man, and then there was the Smurfs. I used to watch
the Smurfs. Oh, the Smurfs. Yeah, Smurfs. Tom and Jerry, yep. too.
Tom and Jerry?
Yeah.
Remember when they made Tom and Jerry speak? That was the worst.
No, get rid of that.
Get rid of that. I choose to ignore that segment of Tom and Jerry.
And then there were cartoons that were even, like, before our time, but they were part of our time. So, uh-huh. like, Scooby-Doo.
Yes!
Right? Scooby-Doo was a big one.
Absolutely.
And Scooby-Doo is another one of those, like, the Tom and Jerry speaking thing, yes. where you get rid of that. Get out with that.
Yeah.
Scrappy-Doo? Leave.
Yes.
Get out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Get rid of that guy.
Yeah. Totally agree. They would bring in new characters. It was dumb.
Yeah. Also, I love the Harlem Globetrotters on there, though. Right? Whenever the Globetrotters show up, it's like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember a show called Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Oh, sweet jeebies, yes.
I love that show.
That was like the kids' version of Jeopardy.
Yeah, that was a super cool show.
It was.
As I grew up, I fell in line with the same stuff. DuckTales, Rescue Rangers, mm-hmm. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some of the live-action stuff, though, Double Dare.
Double Dare.
And you can't do that on television.
Oh, my goodness, the slime.
I know, the slime.
I was surprised as a kid learning that that was made in Canada.
Oh, that it was made in Canada?
Yeah, I was just like, oh, huh, Canada. Also, didn't occur to me ever that things were made outside the United States at that point. Like, oh.
Also, Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, you had that whole block of shows like that. The TGI Fridays.
Yeah.
Family Matters.
Family Matters.
And Step by Step.
Yes.
Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, those were great.
Yeah.
Those were great.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, I mean, you know, those are the things that, and this is what's so funny, to bring it back to kind of being... kind of being a little serious.
Those were your babysitters, weren't they?
Yes, they were for a while there.
Yeah.
To make it serious, though, like that, those are those things that you consider today when we look at the kids who qualify for this sort of stuff. Like, you forget how luxury those items are.
Yeah.
Right? They are. They really, instead of thinking about looking back on your childhood and thinking of all this sort of trauma that happened and all these, like how your parents didn't make it or they moved from house to house or you had to watch something get repossessed or that sort of stuff. We get to think about these sort of fun-loving cartoons.
We do, yeah.
And so I think that that's something that we should all be aware of when we think about, like, you, like kids today and how I think every kid should have an opportunity to be able to look back when they're adults at things wistfully and with good nostalgia and not with, boy, I really hated that part of, like, my life.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show with all these stats and all that sort of stuff how... you know, like, your childhood can really affect how you grow up into adulthood.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and toss it to our interview with Michelle Nelson and Robin Lester of Child Care Aware of Washington. Here it is. All right, so we are sitting here with Robin Lester. You are the Chief Executive Officer, is that correct?
That's correct.
We were just saying, we don't get a lot of CEOs here, so this is big time. And then Michelle Nelson, you're the Director of Community Engagement.
Correct.
For Child Care Aware of Washington.
Correct.
Thank you guys for coming. Thanks for being part of the podcast.
Thank you. We appreciate you having us.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we'll start off with a softball question.
Okay.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the history of Child Care Aware of Washington?
Yes, I can. So Child Care Aware of Washington used to be called Child Care Resource and Referral.
Ooh.
And there's a whole network across the country called CCRNRs, Child Care Resource and Referral. We were incorporated in 1989.
Okay.
But we changed our name to Child Care Aware of Washington to be part of the Child Care Aware of America group.
Wow. I like it much better.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The name seems to get more better response.
Sure.
But Child Care Resource and Referral gave more information
about
what we do. But, and we have, in the state of Washington, there's six regions. So I'm representing the network office that oversees the six regions. The six regions are within other organizations.
Mm.
One of them is in an ESD.
Oh, wow.
One of them, let's see. One of them is in an Opportunity Council up in Washington County.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And one is in Community Minded Enterprises, which is another nonprofit.
Okay.
The one in the Puget Sound region is Child Care Resources, but they all are Child Care Aware of Washington whatever region.
Wow, nice. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Our ESD people will like that.
Nice I know,
connection.
Right? Yeah.
Nice little
and
connection.
Our, and in Olympia here, it's under the...
Child Care Action Council.
Yeah. Ah, yes. We do know the Child Care Action Council. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's sort of the history of it.
Yeah.
Nice. So what does your organization do for the community in Washington State?
Okay. So our vision is that every child in Washington has access to high-quality early learning choices for their children, and for every child care program has the resources and support needed to prepare children for success in life. So we have sort of two audiences. We have the parents who are looking for quality child care, and then we have the providers that we work with to help them maintain the quality.
Yeah. So when we were doing research on this particular subject, the math just doesn't work out. right? So we were looking on your guys' website about the maximum capacity of all the different child care facilities, or, you know, registered child care facilities, and how many kids they cater to. And there are significantly more children in Washington State than the maximum capacity of each of these places. In your experience, is this getting better or is this getting harder?
Good question, because I would say yes to both.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
So is it getting better? Yes. I think the child care, the licensed child care facilities, so there's licensed and unlicensed.
Okay.
We represent licensed child care.
Got it.
Sure.
Okay. On the licensed child care, because we're of early achievers, which is a program of the Department of Early Learning, it's a quality program. Because of that, we are able to provide providers with better tools to help the children learn.
Right.
So in that regard, the quality level, I think, is improving.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, it's just hard to make a living as a child care provider.
We were talking about that exact thing. We can't imagine they make a lot of money.
No. I mean, this is the example I give. So parents complain about the cost of child care, which I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
And then providers are saying, I can't make money.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say they earn $10 an hour, a child care provider. Okay. If you're working, you need to have at least 10 hours of child care, an hour to get before work, an hour after work. So 10 hours. So $10 times 10 hours, $100 times 6 days or 5 days a week even.
Yeah, it's $500 a week.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it's not a lot of money, but it's a lot of money for the parents.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So that's the tension that will be there. And sometimes there have been some providers who just have closed because they can't find a way to make it work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of the other things we're doing, and this is a little off topic, but it's very relevant, we're creating a pilot project on shared services, shared business services.
Oh, okay.
So the network office could offer things like accounting practice, accounting systems, or that type of thing. So the child care provider would then be focusing just on the children and the quality.
Yeah.
We'd be helping with the business.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool.
We're very excited about that because I think it will help have
lighten
more people lighten the burden, have more people come in, make entry into the field easier, and make it easier to stay in the field.
Yeah. In your experience, how does a lack of good child care and early learning affect the child? Like, I mean, there's all these sort of stories about how these kids are playing from behind the minute that they can't get good access to these sort of things. In your guys' experience, what do you notice?
Well, the research is there. It's and you can read, I'm not even going to quote it, there's so much of it. But the years from 0 to 5 are absolutely critical.
Yeah.
Absolutely critical. Yeah. If you have children, do you have children?
Oh, I have 3.
Okay.
So, yeah, I know the exact amount of money that child care costs.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the reason that I don't want any. Yeah. Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. Yes.
But you know that kids are like sponges.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing to watch them.
It is. It's absolutely amazing. So to the question of why, you know, why is it so important to have this kind of, it gives them the step up to be ready. Our goal, the Department of Early Learning has a goal of having 90% of children across the state, regardless of income or race or culture, be ready for kindergarten.
That's an incredible goal.
It's an incredible goal. And we're there to really push it, to make sure that this happens.
Yeah.
Because that is going to improve things for all of us. It's
Absolutely.
Going to give, it's going to make employers happy, because they're going to have better employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make parents happy, because they can relax a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The issue becomes funding.
Well, yeah, of course.
How do you fund this? So we do have some money from the legislature, which helps. But it's that is a big issue.
Right.
But it is absolutely critical that we provide really good quality education to children in their early years, 0 to 5.
Right.
Now, we know that not everybody is going to be in licensed child care. That's just not, it's not possible. So we also support a group called FFN, Family, Friends, and Neighbors.
Okay.
So these are people that are not related to the child, or some of them are related to the child,
Sure.
And some of them are neighbors or friends who take care of kids as well as right. they might be also in licensed child care, or they might be just in FFN care. Mm-hmm. But we provide training to those providers.
That's great.
Play and learn groups yeah. nice. across all the state. Our mm-hmm. six regions cover every community in the yeah. state of Washington.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
So
that's
we were awesome. Able to do that.
Yeah, it is amazing to me when I see my kids, because my oldest just turned six, so he was in that range for a long time, and the other two are younger.
Right.
And it's amazing to me to watch them learn, because I'm like, you are learning so much better than I mm-hmm. am now currently learning anything.
Yeah.
They pick it up so fast. It's a tragedy when they don't have access to that.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So what are some of the resources today that families can use to find affordable child care or early learning? We know we did this video recently with a charity out in Spokane that offers the Martin Luther King mm-hmm. Family Outreach Center that offers free child care to those in impoverished neighborhoods.
Right.
But what are some other resources you guys have that are commonly used by families that need this sort of leg up?
So we run the Family Center. It's run out of our Seattle region,
mm-hmm.
but it's statewide.
Okay.
And it's a call-in line.
Oh.
And it's a web, you can access it. We have a website as well.
Sure. Right.
Because a lot of times people go on a website and they'll see this, but they want other questions.
Yeah. Right.
So until we get our website a little bit more interactive,
yeah.
we also have the call-in center. But it's amazing how many people call. About half and half.
Oh,
wow.
That.
But we have a list of all the licensed child care providers mm-hmm. in the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. And they can ask, they can tell us how old the child is, what areas they're in, and we can pinpoint and give them a list.
Mm-hmm.
We can also give them a rating for early achievers.
Cool.
So we can
yeah.
say, okay, this is a three-rated program in
yeah.
your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so it gives them that.
That's awesome. We would love to post that website.
Yeah.
Okay, and the call-in number.
Yes.
And I have that for you.
No question. Nice. So we would love to have that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think people could use that as a resource.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And last year we impacted more than 70,000 kids.
That's fantastic.
With that call-in yep. line and the website?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then that includes those who are on state subsidy.
Nice.
Yeah, so, and I think that's a big deal.
Oh, it is?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
We want to have that equity across
yeah.
all lines.
Yeah.
Yeah,
amazing.
Absolutely.
Amazing. So let's take a break and talk a little bit about Friday Flicks. Looking for fun and inspiring ways to connect with different charities in our program? The CFD has got you covered. Every Friday during the annual giving campaign, the Combined Fund Drive will release a special video highlighting one of our member charities and what they do for the community. The videos are filled with amazing stories of inspiring people who are helping those in need every day. Check out each video for special content and different ways to give. For all our videos, visit www.cfd.wa.gov/cfd/videos. And back to the show.
What steps can we take in the U.S. and Washington State specifically to make child care access more affordable and available?
Good question. So first of all, I will say very proudly that Washington State is one of the leaders.
Nice.
Oh, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
In fact, the legislation that Patty Murray is working on
right.
yeah.
is based on the Early Start Act.
Oh,
for Washington
cool.
State.
Right on.
Look at that.
So so that's how we got that's our quality. So mm-hmm. when you think of a what they call a QRIS system, which is Quality Rating and Improvement System,
okay.
that's what it's called across the state. In our state, it's called Early Achievers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we brought that in, and that's helping with the quality part.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get access to that?
Mm-hmm.
We have to make it easy for people who want to get into childcare
mm-hmm.
to have that access.
Yeah.
So we have to give them the tools, the resources, being money in some
yeah.
sense,
mm-hmm.
some rate increases for subsidy children, so that they can afford to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I've worked in a number of industries in my life,
mm-hmm.
and I have never seen more dedicated people than the child care providers.
Wow.
They are doing it because they really love it.
Yeah.
They're concerned about the children. They're concerned about giving quality
mm-hmm.
care for the parents as well. So these people really need this support.
Yeah.
And I think that, without getting too political about
mm-hmm.
this, I think that we really have to find a way in the state to
mm-hmm.
put more money into the early learning
right.
sector.
You think that brings up a good point, though? Do you think this is a government problem, a private sector problem, or a both problem?
I think it's a both problem.
Right.
I don't think that, given our structure, our economic and social structure in the United States, you're not. It's going to be harder to have like universal pre-K. Sure.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I think that it's good. I have nothing against universal pre-K, but even with universal pre-K, you wouldn't have the need for childcare because of the hours.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, especially farm workers in the central region. They work 12, 13, 14 hours a day during harvest.
Yeah. Right.
So even if you had universal pre-K, but I think the best way to solve it is to have that business, you know, the partnership of you know, the private and public sectors together.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to, I think that's how we would maintain the quality.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we could maintain affordability.
Yeah.
But then there's the rub of getting that money. Where do we find that money to go into? So I'm on a big mission right now to get more businesses to sort of step up and really understand what is important and how important it is. Not what is important, but how important early learning is. And what has helped us is the United States Chamber of Commerce Foundation has just issued a report. And I'll get you a copy. It's fascinating. But it shows what quality child care can do for both the employee and the employer.
Because
you know, if you have good child care or your children are taken care of when you're at work, you don't have to worry,
about it.
You can actually focus on your job.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating report. It's something we've been waiting for years.
Yeah.
And, but it's saying definitely that the business community needs to step up.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of those things I've always found strange is that all of these kids are going to be adults.
Exactly.
So why not take care of them?
Don't you want them employable?
Yeah, don't you want them to be like healthy members of society once you give them access to this stuff?
Totally agree.
Exactly. Yeah. Long-term view.
Yeah.
Department of Health, and so Department of Health does this thing right now where they allow, I can't remember what age they actually stop, but it's super young. I mean, it's like newborn to a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. They allow the mother to bring the baby in, and they have these rooms, they're like nursing rooms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome, but one of the things I've always thought of is, like, you should take that model and you should make it bigger. Mm-hmm. You should have businesses try as hard as they can to put daycare facilities on the grounds, especially if they're bigger facilities, right? And then the mom or dad can come, drop the kid off, and then go about their day. If there's any emergency situations, they go right to this place. Mm-hmm. You can charge them the mother or father a competitive wage, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can charge them what you need to charge them. Could come right out of their paycheck, like the
deductions.
FSA something like that. And then you could have the government supplement that by giving the business like a tax break or something like that. I just always thought that was a cool idea.
Yeah,
it's always this kooky, one of those kooky things.
No, it's a great idea, and I think that we're going to have to marry those two ideas of public and private, because I don't think we have the money to do it public only.
Right.
Yeah.
But if we can get the private and public partnership going really strongly, not just lip service, but where you're actually, you have a program and you know what it is and you know which part is going to pay for which thing. And it makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys, we did read on your site, you guys do some advocacy work.
Yes, we
do. You guys are here every single year at the Capitol doing something?
Yes, we have a director of advocacy and policy on staff.
Awesome. Awesome.
So what do donations do for Child Care Aware of Washington?
So the money is used primarily for two things right now. Mm-hmm. Scholarships.
Okay.
So we have a program for scholarships for providers.
Okay.
Right, okay.
And or staff. Mm-hmm. And the staff isn't just in my office. It's statewide. Who need to, because in order to maintain the quality, we need higher education for the providers and the staff working with them.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we use the money for.
Awesome. Scholarships.
Oh, we have over 1,000 scholars.
Oh, wow. Through the program. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, these are kids.
No, these are providers.
These are the providers.
These are the providers. Okay. The scholar, the children don't have to pay anything.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That's good for them, since they hopefully don't have jobs yet.
Yeah. Get to work, kid. I got to afford that child care somehow.
You're paying for your child care.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So where do you think, moving forward, the biggest need is for your guys' organization or organizations like you?
I think the biggest need is support to increase the number of child care providers. So we served, we have about, 4,000 providers that are licensed child care that we support for quality improvement and implementation. Mm-hmm. I like, the I is supposed to be for improvement, but I like to think of it as improvement and implementation.
Sure.
Because we're doing both.
Yeah.
And so we actually go out, we have staff across the state that goes out and coaches the provider.
Nice.
We'll go and watch the provider, help them with how they're doing things, mm-hmm. and that's expensive.
Yeah.
But it's what we know, all the research shows, the data shows, that coaching is the one thing that really moves the needle on quality.
Interesting. Okay, interesting. Nice.
We have a data and evaluation group within our organization that tracks all of this on a monthly basis, so we know exactly what's going on.
And do you notice a socioeconomic gap? Like, let's say kids from minority neighborhoods or underprivileged neighborhoods, is it harder for them to find, I mean, this might be an obvious question, is it harder for them to find good, decent, high-quality child care compared to perhaps more affluent neighborhoods?
That's a good question. I just came back from a national convention, Leadership Institute for Child Care Aware of America, and they had a panel, a parent panel, mm-hmm. and it was very interesting because the panel was full spectrum. Race, culture, mm-hmm. religion.
Yeah.
And one of the things that the parents said is they always look for somewhere like they are. Someone where their child
that is
will
really
get
interesting.
The culture they need, that they will feel comfortable, because these are young kids.
Sure.
So they will be feel comfortable with the culture, the language, and what have you. That seemed to them to be the most important thing. Knowing that their provider was getting coached on quality was just an added bonus.
Wow.
So, yes to your question, is there a difference in the community?
Yeah.
Probably there are not as many child care facilities or providers that serve low-income individuals.
Yes.
But there are more and more providers taking low-income children than there were before.
Okay.
That's good.
And that and it helps that we have a subsidy for those providers.
Right.
They get a little subsidy from the state. We need to
keep inching it up.
Inching it up. Or jumping it up a little more.
Yeah, not so much inch.
Yeah.
But that's and you have, so we have Somali providers, we have Spanish speaking providers, we have Russian providers.
Nice.
We have throughout the state.
Yeah.
And they receive their training and their coaching as much as possible in the language that they're most comfortable with.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that they can pass along. Actually, one of the most interesting child care facilities I've seen in the last couple of years was in Pasco.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was a monolingual Spanish provider, and the children in there, the day I was there, it was the summer, so there were older kids there. And so the older kids were kind of translating for the younger kids from English to Spanish.
Yeah.
And it was, so they had this game where they had these blocks and colors.
Uh-huh.
And so it would say Rosa. And the kid would take the red or the pink one and put it in the right, and then they would say the name in English.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was like, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
This is monolingual Spanish.
Right.
But so it's interesting how the communities work to find the way to make it work for their children.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And I think that's the key.
Do you guys have hope for things moving forward, that things can get better, that you guys can find a way to make child care more access and affordable and higher quality?
I always have hope.
Awesome. I like that.
There's always hope. And I think that we have the dedication of these providers and parents. It takes both sides.
Yeah.
You know, it takes the parent to be aware of what's going on and ask for more things.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the provider willing to do that. And we have a really good partnership going on in that regard.
Awesome.
I think that we have really strong quality programs in the state of Washington that we should be very proud of.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
And finally,
Did you guys have any upcoming events or anything that you'd like to highlight and talk about as far as the program itself?
So our program doesn't really have like events because we're doing, this is 12 months out of the year, sometimes 24/7.
Yeah.
We have some providers that do 24/7 care.
Wow.
Especially like in the central area or eastern where they're doing harvest and that
yeah.
type
yeah.
of thing. So we don't have anything coming up.
Sure.
But what I would say is that quality costs money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if we want to keep that quality standard up, we need to have those funds available. I think areas that you would want to donate to would be, child care in itself, but also the quality standards, the training and the coaching that the providers get, the scholarships we have, the family to donating to the family center so that so we could increase our play and learn groups. I think that's really the focus. It's just
fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, Michelle and Robin, thank you guys so much for joining on the podcast. It was really fun to have you guys here.
Well, thank you very much. It was fun to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, so that was our conversation with Child Care Aware of Washington, which used to be some other title that was much more boring than Child Care Aware of Washington.
Definitely.
Those guys were cool. High energy.
From
CEO Robin Lester.
It.
That was cool. Especially cool to hear, all the different things they're doing. Really, really cool charity. You guys should check out some of the links that are up there. Especially that Chamber of Commerce link. I bet you that's something interesting. So some of our upcoming stuff, November, as many of you know, is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. We aired the video for Alzheimer's Society of Washington. Pretty cool. Had a bunch of state employees, family members who were battling Alzheimer's or who had lost their battle to Alzheimer's. Very inspiring stuff. Also coming up is Giving Tuesday, which happens on November 28th. It is kind of the new thing over the last three or four years, I feel like, right?
Yeah, it seems that they went from something happening on Thursday I think that's called Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then Black Friday, Small Business Saturday.
Small holiday, Thanksgiving.
Was it Cyber Monday? I don't know if there's Sunday.
Black Friday, Cyber Monday.
Black Friday, Small Business Saturday.
Oh, that's right. American
Sunday.
Express decided they were going to enter that.
Whatever. Place. Then Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday.
Giving Tuesday, sort of the philanthropist's answer to all that greed that you go through
the
over
the past 4 days, like the previous 4 days there.
Gluttony and greed that you go through between eating all that crazy food
and
then
buying.
Spending a ton of money.
Hey, why don't you give back?
Also, let's just say right now, Black Friday is not for Christmas shopping. Black Friday is for yourself shopping.
Well,
is that right?
I would say so. I mean.
Have you ever shopped on Black Friday for Christmas gifts for somebody else?
No, I only shopped on Black Friday once, and it was with somebody who wanted something for themselves.
Yes. I went shopping once.
Yeah.
It was for a TV for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't so that I could buy my dad a TV.
No, you don't get deals for people on that day. You get deals for yourself.
Right.
I think, too, like, for Christmas, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of getting Christmas presents, like, the week of.
Absolutely.
So I don't even care about Black Friday.
Don't even come to me about Christmas until it's December 14th at minimum.
Forget this Christmas stuff.
Giving Tuesday is pretty cool. The CFD will probably do something pretty fun for Giving Tuesday just to have it out there. Also, a reminder to everybody, the last week to give for the annual giving campaign, we kind of talked about it during the podcast with these guys. You can give all year round.
Yeah.
But just for the purposes of our own sanity, we do not make the annual giving campaign go all year round.
No, yeah.
So it ends, the last week to give is December 4th through December 8th. So all you campaign leaders, get your fundraisers in by December 8th. We would super duper love it.
We would.
Mm-hmm.
So would all the charities.
Yes, so would all the charities because then they get their money
in January.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yes, it is. So, so that's basically what's coming up. Pretty light schedule, I think, for the CFD over November. We really want to thank Michelle and Robin for coming by and joining the podcast. And we want to thank you for listening, as always.
Thank you.
So that's it. Take care, people.